It is nearly 2 weeks since terrorists again tragically attacked the streets of Europe, and this time on a boulevard in beautiful Barcelona. The attack killed what is now reported to be 16 people, including the terrible death of 7-year-old Australian Julian Cadman. Unfortunately, Australia has not been immune to this threat either. To discuss the issue in some more depth, we're joined by Professor Greg Barton, Research Professor in Global Islamic Politics at the Alfred Deakin Institute. Good morning, Professor Barton.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So how is the threat of terrorism continuing to change, both at home and abroad?
Well, the bigger change occurred going back 3-4 years before the rise of the Islamic State group, so-called. In the last 2 years in particular, ever since we saw the downing of a Russian Metrojet flight out of Sharm el-Sheikh in Egyptian Sinai, and preceded by massive suicide bombings in Ankara and Beirut, and then, of course, the November 13 attack in Paris. Those last 2 years, we've seen a constant stream of attacks across a broad spectrum, and that spectrum includes strangers who Islamic State doesn't know but incites to violence and sort of equips in terms of online material through to guided attacks like the Paris attack. The Barcelona attack was a very sophisticated attack. In the end, the attacker used fairly simple implements, a rented van, but the attackers were planning a much larger attack using homemade explosives packed with around gas cylinders in a truck, probably something extremely powerful. The explosion that destroyed their bomb factory literally obliterated the house they were working out of, and they probably wanted that to be a cathedral in downtown Barcelona. But that group appears to have operated more or less autonomously and have been radicalized by one man, a local imam, quite quickly. So a dozen men who were clean skins, no police records, working without network communications, it seems, with Syria and Islamic State headquarters. So that's another manifestation of a pattern. But we can expect a full spectrum of attempts, of attacks. The ones that most worry authorities are the so-called lone wolf attacks, because they're the hardest to see coming. And in a way, the Barcelona attack was a kind of a more sophisticated version of that.
Okay, so, I mean, how can governments best respond to this?
Well, the thing to bear in mind is that with attacks like Barcelona, there was a failure of intelligence, and that sort of suggests that intelligence is hopeless. But actually, intelligence most times is what keeps us safe. And one aspect of intelligence that's very important is human intelligence. And that's not just the job of police and security agencies, but also of community. We've had at least a dozen, 13 attacks attempted in Australia that have been thwarted, many of them by people speaking up when they had concerns. So that's the first thing to bear in mind. In terms of attacks with vehicles, there are things that can be done in vulnerable public spaces. In hindsight, La Ramblas in Barcelona, that very popular mall, could have been made a bit safer with barriers to vehicles, at least the barriers that slowed the passage of vehicles down the mall. Similarly, the promenade in Nice that was attacked on Bastille Day in July of last year, where we saw one man mow down and kill 86 people and injure hundreds of others with a truck, that could have been made much safer with some sort of chicanes or barricades that would have stopped or slowed a vehicle's progress. So that's one thing we're seeing being done in Australia. It's not a perfect solution, but there is no single solution to these problems. So working better on intelligence, working to make public places less vulnerable, and then one of the things we're thinking about in Australia at the moment is what's happening in our region, and there's concerns about particularly the city of Marawi, a city of 300,000 people, the largest Muslim city in the Philippines, which is still now in the third month, 100 days of siege. And the concern is not so much that one city, which is bad enough, but the galvanizing effect of the southern Philippines and the presence of Islamic State there demonstrated to draw in militants from across the region. And of course, that may lead to attacks in Australia, but more likely attacks in Indonesia or Malaysia or the Philippines that may involve Australians, but certainly should concern Australians.
Well, in that vein, how will the new terror plan announced by Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull impact the terror threat in Australia then and in the region?
Well, in the region, the big weakness the Philippines faces is intelligence and surveillance capacity. And so Australia is helping both technically with PC-3 Orion aircraft, but also now just announced sending people in to train the Philippines personnel. So that's a very practical contribution, quite a big development. The Prime Minister's plan announced last week was more the beginning of a public conversation that was saying that we need to work together, local communities, local government, business, to identify where we have concerns about vulnerabilities that can be readily addressed. We can't address all the vulnerabilities, and work together to do that. And this is not just public places, but even private spaces. So if if you're running a large shopping mall, there's a duty of care to think about fire exits and safety with things like balustrades anyway. Well, added to that duty of care is thinking about what would happen if you had an active shooter or somebody try and drive a vehicle through a crowd. And to the extent that we can reasonably take precautions, sort of akin to putting up a fence around a swimming pool, then it makes sense that we take those reasonable precautions. Mm. The Prime Minister's plan was speaking to those sort of practical things.
Well, and I mean, building on that, so why is the communication with the Islamic community so important?
Well, it's important because it's a good and in and of itself. We don't want terrorists to change the way we live and destroy our democracy. And so if we turn on each other and become embittered and resentful or suspicious, then that's handing a victory to terrorists. So for the sake of our own Australian culture and democracy, we need to prioritise working together. But to put it more directly in terms of immediate security, if people don't have the confidence to pick up a phone or walk into an office and speak to somebody when they have concerns about perhaps somebody who's quite close to them, perhaps a child or a spouse, if they don't have that confidence, then they're not going to do it. And if they don't do it, they may be the only person who can sound an alarm when somebody has been groomed and radicalised. And often we're talking at this stage in time about young children, school-aged teenagers and people in their early 20s. So it's in everyone's interest, the communities who are being targeted by these recruiters and general society, that we have the confidence and trust with each other that we can work together. And if somebody has concerns, even if it's, a very difficult thing to do to alert authorities that maybe somebody you love is coming under bad influence, it's very important that trust is there to speak up and take action.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that, Professor.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
That was Professor Greg Barton of the Alfred Deakin Institute talking about the future of the impending terrorist threat around the world.